Thank you very much for the invitation and for this talk. I'm very glad to be here. It's fantastic for me, so first of all, thank you for this. And today, so I want to tell you a bit about the generalized angular momentum via Wolff-Zupas. So first, I have to tell you what I mean by generalized angular momentum and what I mean by Wolff-Zupas. And the story I want that I want to tell is about asymptotic symmetries, actually. So it starts a long time ago when Bondy, Van der Borg, Metzner, and Sachs published their seminal paper about the BMS group at null infinity. So what is it? It's, you know, that if you impose that the metric is a background in an asymptotically flat spacetime, you don't only get the 10 symmetries of the Poincaré group, but you have more symmetries. They are called the super translation, and you can understand them a bit in the way that in your asymptotic region, all the different of goals of the celestial sphere are disconnected, causally disconnected. And so you can say, for instance, that if you want to attach a clock at every point of this celestial sphere, you can have no way of synchronizing the clock. So any, not the global time translation should be a symmetry, but also all the local angle-dependent time translations at infinity. Or you can see it the other way, we can say that at infinity, the geodesic do not cross on a scry. It's also the case on, it's also the case on a non-expanding horizon, for instance, and so you can shift each null geodesic individually at the, on a non-expanding horizon on our scry. And so super translations are part of these symmetries, and you cannot get rid of them. And the story could be over, but recently there was a lot of excitation in this field because Strominger and collaborators they showed that actually the asymptotic symmetries were related to soft theorems and to memory effects, and actually to take into account all the soft theorems, they needed to use an extension of the BMS symmetry that we call extended BMS. So in BMS, all the symmetries are a global conformal Killing field of the sphere, but here you can extend it to local Killing symmetries of the conformal Killing symmetries of the sphere. But you can go even further, because first, it's not obvious that all the subleading soft theorems can be related to extended BMS. Maybe there are more. This is the work of Campeglia and Lada. But also, I want to give an argument that is more of the on the for relativistic point of view. Sometimes you want to define symmetries by saying I have a background and I want to look at the diffeomorphisms which preserve these backgrounds. This is what we do, for instance, in Minkowski spacetime, where you have you call a symmetry something that preserves this background, so that preserves the flat metric, and you find the 10 Poincaré generators. But maybe a way of seeing the symmetries in at the purest level would be to look at the symplectic presymplectic form. And we know that gauge symmetries are degenerate directions of the presymplectic form. So the good symmetries are the ones which remain. And so if you stick, for instance, to the diffeomorphisms of the spheres, they are not part of the BMS group. But if you you look at the presymplectic forms, you can see that it has no reason to vanish for these diffeomorphisms of the sphere. So why not including them in the symmetry group at finite distance, say, and at infinity? And this is very important also for a recent Kronor proposal. Luca wrote a nice review about it. And what they want to do on the Kronor proposal, so I cited some authors who contributed to it, is to say that you have to promote the charges, the Noether charges, as quantum operators instead of the metric by itself. And then you have to promote the non-vanishing charges, so the charges associated to the real symmetries and not the one to the gauge symmetries. So what we will do during this talk, so now if you have this, all the diffeomorphisms of the sphere are the symmetries, we want to find a way to write Noether charges that are not ambiguous and well-defined at infinity, and I will explain later what I mean by well-defined and not ambiguous. But It will be the goal of this talk. And for this, we'll need to review the WhatZooPass procedures, what is good about it, and what are its limitations. And this will be interesting. We will see also, before going to generalized BMS or the diffeomorphism of the sphere, we will look at what happens at the level of the BMS group. So what are here the charges that and the flux that we already have, which have been they have been worked out by Ashtekar and Strobel and Ray Strobel. And as a warm-up, we will construct covariant symplectic potential and stationary. So the symplectic potential I will explain later for those who don't know what it is exactly. But it will basically what will give us the flux of the charge. And we will find a covariant one and a stationary one. Which allows us to define local notion of asymptotic energy. And for this, we will need to introduce edge modes, an edge mode that is already known in the literature, which is called the supertranslation field. The algebra won't have any central extension, and this we'll see that it is something that is that we get from the covariant requirement. But now we will. Then after we will move to generalized BMS or to, and we will look at the symplectic potential for generalized BMS, and we will see that actually there is no covariance that can be achievable in the usual way for this group. But we'll find another group which is very similar to generalized BMS. Which is made of the diffeomorphisms which preserve the round sphere, and we will get from this new group a symplectic potential that is covariant and stationary, and that we will give us an ambiguous, almost non-ambiguous notion of charges at null infinity, and we will recover actually for those who know the charges that compare Ruzziconi and Fiorucci got in their first paper about these superboost charges, but but as an outer charges. So first, before talking about all this, I want to review what what is exactly an outer charge, what is the WhatZooPass procedure, what is a good symplectic potential. So you know that if you take a theory and take the variation of the Lagrangian, you will get two pieces. The first one will be the equation of motion, and the other one will be total derivative in space-time. And the symplectic potential will be defined as the term in this, the theta that you see here, this boundary term. So now, I should stop a bit here. I don't know if you're used if everyone is used to the covariant phase space notations, but here I will define in space-time the interior derivative by xi d and the lead derivative by lig xi with the Cartan formula. And when I will come to the covariant phase space, I will use exactly the same notations, but here when I'm taking the variation delta, I will only take the variation with respect to the field that belong to my theory. So for instance, because I'm general relativity, if I have a tensor, general tensor sigma, which depends on the field G, which is the metric, and other fields, like for instance, conformal factors or foliation, then the delta will act only on G. So delta xi, the contraction of the variation with the vector field xi, will be only concerned by the variation of the metric. While if you take the usual lead derivative, in general, you will have two pieces, the contribution from the metric plus the contribution of the unphysical fields or background fields, or you can name whatever you want. But the covariance requirement says us that we should have what I call covariant is the equality between this field space lead derivative delta xi and this space-time lead derivative lig xi, which is the usual one. Okay? So general relativity, relativity is very special because it doesn't have any background. So usually we define, you know, the energy as with the stress energy tensor, which is given by the functional derivative of the Lagrangian with respect to the metric. And because in general relativity, this is exactly the equation of motions, it means that you don't have bulk energy in general relativity. You have the energy or the charges will be, in general, will be boundary terms. But so you can obtain these charges with the symplectic potential theta and the Lagrangian L, but there are some maybe ambiguities in the definition of theta, because you see you can always add a boundary Lagrangian dL to the initial Lagrangian, and with the formula that I wrote above, it will shift the symplectic potential by a term in delta L. And in addition, because you have d theta which appears here, you can always add an exact form d var theta, and it gives you exactly the same theories. So the symplectic potential that I want and that will determine the charge, maybe I should just write the formula for the Noether current in general, because it's very important, is given by the contraction of the symplectic potential that I choose with the symmetric vector field in field in field space, which represents my symmetric psi, minus arc psi of the Lagrangian that I chose, minus delta x, minus the Nundokom variance of the boundary Lagrangian, just to tell you how I can get these Noether charges. And this on shell is a boundary term. But so you see that I need to determine the symplectic potential in order to have a charge. And I want something more. I want my symplectic potential to be covariant. Why do I want it to be covariant? I want it to be covariant because the symplectic potential will define the flux of my charge. You see here that the charge variations q psi is given by arc psi of theta. So it's given by the symplectic potential up to other terms. But I want something covariant, because if it's covariant, it means that my flux does not measure the background. If I have good charges, I don't want then that the flux measures the foliation that I chose, or the conformal factors, or all these kind of additional structures that I need to introduce in order to have a well-defined charge. So this covariance requirement is very, yes, it's essential in the sense that at the end, what you want to measure is really geometry and not any quantity with it's related to a background structure. So this is the first, the second requirement, and the third requirement is that the stationarity requirement, and tells you that the symplectic potential around a non-radiative solution, so when you don't have any gravitational waves, no news at infinity, should be zero. And this is, of course, more or less what Wald and Tsupas did 20 years ago, except that they didn't allow to take this corner term here, because they wanted to conserve the symplectic form, and the symplectic form, when you add this corner term, is modified. And we will come back to this a bit later, but for now, I want to allow to have this corner term, because why not? I mean, there is an ambiguity in the symplectic potential. And once I did this, I can define the charges à la Noether. So here you can read Laurent's paper or Harlow paper, and this is the formula that you get for the charge, or à la Wald-Tsupas. And in this expression, it's very important that you get the covariance requirement in order to define this. And this, with the covariance requirements, tells you that the charge variation is actually only given by the symplectic flux, so arc psi of theta bar. And there is no other terms like the non-covariance of the boundary Lagrangian, or I don't know what this is. Just the charge variation is given by arc psi of theta bar being the symplectic potential. This formula is very, very important for the following. So we want that. So this is very general, but now we'll be interested more in null infinity. So how do we get null infinity? So of course, the matrix in general diverges at infinity. So we will proceed to the conformal compactification. We'll introduce a conformal factor omega, which vanishes at infinity. And such that the normal is given by the derivative of this conformal factor. And if you impose, in addition, the Einstein equations to this, then you see that n, the normal, should be null. So it means that it's tangent to null infinity, to Scry. And now, what is a BMS symmetry? A BMS symmetry is telling you, OK, so you want to fix the metric as a background. So it means that at infinity, g hat, the unphysical metric, must be background. So it must be equal to 0, because delta only take into account the variation in the field space. But what does it mean in terms of Lie derivative? In terms of Lie derivative, this equation means that the Lie derivative of the unphysical metric is proportional to the unphysical metric itself.
You can use the pointer.
Ah, yeah, sorry. It's proportional to the unphysical metric itself. And this tells you that actually Xi should be a conformal Killing field of the unphysical metric. Of course, it also tells you that n alpha xi alpha should be zero at Scry, because if it's not the case, this term is divergent. And so it just tells you that this tells you that the symmetry should be also tangent to null infinity. And so you can find a symplectic potential that satisfies the requirement that I gave you before, on the slide before, which are the Waldzupach requirements, like this. So this is the Hashteker-Strobel flux. So it's proportional to the news and take the variation of the shear. The news, here I put a hat because I already mean the covariant news. This is the one that should vanish, not the news that you define like the derivative of CAB. This is true on round sphere, but in general. But it's not very important for the remaining. But if you want to take to be careful about covariance, you really have to be general and be in non-one spheres. And this, the fact that the covariant news vanishes tells you that there is no flux, there is no gravitational waves at infinity. And from this, you can deduce the Dray-Strobel charges. I just give you the expressions of you have a mass aspect and angular momentum aspect. But so this is very good, but we want to go a bit beyond this. And for this, I will introduce the notion of edge modes. The first paper, I mean, the theorizing the edge mode, I think it's the one from William Donnelly and Laurent Friedel. Also, there is a nice paper it's the one of Carlo Rovelli. Why it's gauge? I think he doesn't talk about edge modes at all in this paper, but many ideas of it are in, and it's very nice to read, so I recommend it if you haven't read it yet. But the point is, you can. It's just to add new fields in the phase space that we call the edge modes. And one of them that has already been studied in the literature is the supertranslation field, U0. This field is U independent. So okay, you know you are at Scry. At Scry. You can always choose a coordinate system such that n mu, the vector, is given by d by du, mu. This u that I wrote here is ambiguous up to a supertranslation, but it's OK. And so the reason to introduce this edge mode is because it gives you a kind of free reference frame. It tells you, OK, if I am an observer at some point and I'm in Minkowski spacetimes, for instance, I want my shear to be 0. If I want my shear to be 0, the shear is not always 0. So sorry, if you don't know what is the shear, is the first component of the asymptotic development of the GAB metric. This is the CAB that you see here. But the shear is not necessarily zero, even in vacuum Minkowski. But you can always put it to zero by adding this edge mode and saying that the good shear is not the shear CIB that appears in the metric development, but what you have just here. So the shear that we have in the components of the metric, minus a term that vanishes if you are in round spheres, and minus this term, which is the electric part of the shear, if you want. But the point with this new shear that we could call the covariant shear or whatever you want, covariant because it's non-covariant, it's only homogeneous. It comes from the fact that the you know, the metric is defined, the physical metric is defined with a conformal factor that can be true. You can choose it whatever you want. So of course you have weight, conformal weight that is non-zero. But if you only take the shear here, you will have an ambiguity in its definition. And this is what happens in the memory effect, for instance, because in the memory effect, you will measure difference of shears between two vacuum solutions. But what is really measurable here, it's not the shear by itself, it's really the difference of shear between the two solutions. And so you can always say, okay, I can fix my shear at some point at when u goes to infinity or u goes to minus infinity. I can say it's, I can assume that it is given by this source, by this scalar field u0. And as I said, the good point when by defining this is you have something that is almost covariant, so which is not the case of the real shear. But this is the boundary conditions that I want for my covariant shear. I want to say that when I'm at infinity, or it can be plus infinity or minus infinity, it's whatever you want, but at some point, if I am in a round sphere, I want that my shear to be given only by, to be sourced only by this u0. So this is not very restrictive. But the point is that now, if you want to construct this notion of covariant shear, what you have to do is to add the corner term to the symplectic potential. And this corner term will depend on this supertranslation field introduced by Comper, Fiorucci, and Rodziconi. And it will take this form. And now, if you take a new symplectic potential, so you had the Heisticker Strobel one, the one that I showed you before. That's really the usual one that we use when you compute BMS charges. You add this boundary term, and you have a new symplectic potential. Now you have the covariant news, but also the covariant shear. The point about the symplectic potential, it is totally covariant. So you recover a covariant symplectic potential, and you have charges which are modified by corner terms. So the exact expression of the charges is not very important. But what maybe is more important and more physical is the following, is that now you see that you have not only the Bondi mass or its version in the non-round spheres, but you also subtracted the derivative of the shear. This is something that's appeared in the literature before. And you can go seeing the Moreshi paper when it talks about this combination. It didn't have the supertranslation field, but actually this is the covariant version of it. And now you see that you have charges which only depend, which were the Drey-Strobel charges, the usual one with m hat and pa, but now depend also of this covariant shear. And when you take now the variation of these charges,
question: the m hat is the covariant mass, or like it's the mass like the mb in the Bondi paper? Like,
okay,
what m hat? How does m hat transform?
Okay, so m hat is the Bondi mass plus it's not exactly the covariant mass that Laurent was talking about, but it's the Bondi mass plus a term that is proportional to the Gerock tensor. The Gerock tensor, that is the rho that I was talking about, and this is what vanishes in round spheres.
So that the m hat is the one is appearing the 2018 Rodziconi compare Fiorucci.
This is not, yes, it is also what they have, but it was
Same m, and but this m transformed the same way as the covariant mass that Laurent introduced, I think.
It transformed the same way, I think.
But anyway, I think just okay. Know what it is. So that's the shifted was the new.
Yes, yes. And with the
and that the QS is the Noether charge.
Is the Noether charge associated to this symplectic potential, the covariant one?
Okay.
And again, if you just forget about this term, if you take u zero equals to zero, you have just the Drey-Strobel charge, which is given by this m hat and not the Bondi mass if you are in a non-round sphere, plus this term, which is the Drey-Strobel angular momentum. The point about this is that now if I take a supertranslation, an arbitrary supertranslation, I get that the variation of the charge is not given by is not the usual one, but you will only have the covariant mu squared times an arbitrary supertranslation t. Maybe you know it, but when you take the variation of the mass, of the bonding mass, you have usually two terms. You have a term that looks like this one, which is the nu squared, plus a term equals a soft term equal to the second derivative of the nu. And by doing this shift, actually, we found another symplectic potential using the supertranslation field, such that the flux of any supertranslations is only given by the hard term. So here, if you imagine that you have an arbitrary supertranslation T that is very peaked on somewhere on the celestial sphere, it means that this charge can, in some sense, measure the local energy at some angle xa on the celestial sphere, because for a supertranslation that is positive, its variation is always negative. It's a kind of local version of the Bondi formula, mass loss formula that usually only works for the global translations.
So there's a covariant version of the Bondi thing, and what is nice is that it's manifestly negative, so you're only losing.
Yes, yes, yes. But I mean, the usual one is also covariant. The point is that now, with this U0, with this supertranslation field, and by adding corner terms, you can add a version of you can get a symplectic potential that gives you a local mass formula, but both are covariant. It just are charges which measure different things.
Yeah, if you maybe the usual Bondi mass is not generally covariant. It's only when you restrict to VMS.
Okay.
That's kind of an issue.
Yeah, yeah.
You mean?
I'm very in VMS. Yeah. Yeah. For now, I just worked on BMS.
Sorry, can you comment on how this, what you call new charge, are related to the literature? Because there has been many works that have looked at those, and this seems reminiscent of some recent works that people are talking about.
Yeah, I mean,
hard and soft piece.
Yeah, yeah, of course. I mean, this is if you see the Bondi mass loss formula, it's you can always just subtract one term and just look at the hard terms. Here, I think the point, but maybe I'm wrong, but I haven't seen in the literature, maybe it's just to write it as an outer charge with this symplectic potential, given by the covariant nu and the covariant shear. Maybe it's. As
no, we can look into this later. Because
I think Romain and Laura.
Ah, you did?
They did propose.
So this is the same.
That splits the arm.
They look very similar.
But
and with the supertranslation field.
With this, with the NVAC as well. And
yes.
Okay.
But we can look. I mean.
Okay. Okay, sorry. So I didn't know this paper, but. So maybe these are similar charges. And And this was So now, the good point also about covariance is that by one first, the fact is now you added a corner term to the symplectic form, and by adding a corner term, you added a corner term to the symplectic potential, and so you modified the symplectic form, and you modified it by a corner term. But this is a bit bad if you want something symplectic form which is local, and which is local, because then it means that in the bulk, for instance, as this corner term depends on the supertranslation field, it doesn't have much meaning. But if you think about the symplectic form as something that must be integrated on the Cauchy surface, then there is no problem, because just this corner term appears at infinity on the at cry, and so as an integral, this is well defined. So now if you want to talk about the algebra of this, you can introduce the Branisch-Trossard bracket, which is given by this. So you have the charge, the variation of the charge with respect to the symmetric psi, chi, minus a flux term. And you see that this bracket is nice because if the theta bar, the flux is zero, which happens when the nu is zero, then the bracket just generates the charge. And now, because of covariance, you can see that, so the covariance, I mean really this requirement, you can see that the difference between the two brackets on two cross sections of scry is exactly equal to the charge of the bracket on the two cross sections. So you have, in general, when you have this this requirement, a central expansion which is independent of S, of the cross section. Furthermore, if you take C hat equals to zero when U goes to infinity, you have that on the asymptotic limit of scry, you find the usual Drey-Strobel charges, and we know that this one do not have central extension. So, and because the central extension, because of this property, is independent of the cross section, at the end you don't have any central extension at all, and for any cross section of S, you have this property. Now. So now it was only about BMS, and I want to go beyond, so I will use what I said just before. But first, I will introduce the generalization of this BMS group. So in the BMS group, we had this background structure, which was the unphysical metric. And now we want to lighten it, so we will only fix some components in some sense of the unphysical metric. We will fix the normal form, the normal vector, and the n-affinity kn. But in general, the unphysical metric, the first component QAB that you see here, that was fixed in BMS, is not fixed anymore. It can vary. And this allows you to take into account vile transformations and super rotations. And you get the BMSW group that has this form. And the problem when you do this is that, okay, now you have more symmetries, but there are many divergences at infinity. So you have to renormalize it. And by doing this, you are forced to introduce a corner term of this form. And it's in the paper of Laurent, Roberto Daniele, and Simone. And by doing this, by adding this corner term, you get a finite synthetic potential at infinity. But there is one caveat when you do this, is now if you want to do the perform the Wald-Zupas procedure, so the one that I was telling before, with this renormalized symplectic potential, you have to first look at the covariance of it. And when you look at the covariance of this renormalized symplectic potential, you see many terms. Some are corner terms, and this is not too bad, because corner terms, you can always add other corner terms in principle, maybe in order to get cancellations of these terms. You also have total divergence of the sphere, but if you integrate on the sphere, this is just zero. And you have, finally, bulk term, which vanish if you are in BMS, because this term is zero. But in general, as BMS or BMSW, they do not vanish anymore. However, all these terms are proportional to the derivative A of W. So maybe I didn't write it, but an asymptotic vector. Maybe I will write it that. It's in BMSW, it has this form. So you have a generic super translation, virus scaling W, and you have the arbitrary diffeomorphisms of the sphere. Okay. And this is the term that is problematic, because if the derivative with respect to the angle is not zero, then you seem to have a problem in the covariance that you cannot solve by adding an arbitrary boundary term in the Lagrangian or an arbitrary corner term. So what can you do? Well, it would be good to have something that is very similar to BMSW or GBMS, but only with constant rescaling W. Because if you do this, you don't have these problems anymore. By the way, if you don't care about covariance and still wants to have a symplectic potential and look at the notor charges that you get, you can indeed obtain a symplectic potential that reproduces the charges of Compare, Fiorucci and Ruzziconi in their first paper, but there is still this problem for GBMS, but there is still this problem of covariance. Okay, but now if you really want covariance, what we should do is look at the symmetry group, which is given by all the diffeomorphisms of the sphere, all the supertranslations, and constant rescaling. And what does it correspond to in terms of background structures? So we know that if you're doing a conformal transformation, the Ricci scalar transforms this way. And in the end, this group will, the diffeomorphisms will be the diffeomorphism which preserve the one sphere. So if you have a conformal radial transformation of omega, the Ricci scalar changes in general, and you can see that the Ricci scalar stays constant. So it means that you can modify the Rond sphere, but only by a constant rescaling such that you are still in the Rond sphere. Only in two cases, either you take all the diffeomorphisms of the sphere and, first, either you take all the conformal isometry of the sphere and impose these conditions. Tau dot is just W. And require that this component this W is given by the divergence of the diffeomorphisms. And because they are conformal isometries, you recover BMS. Or what you can do is keep all the diffeomorphisms of the sphere, and that's what we will do now. And instead, remove the L equal 1's harmonics from tau dot of W. So if we do this, this is constant, this is arbitrary, and we have an algebra which closes. And this is a subgroup of BMSW, so for the algebra, you can just look at the paper of Laurent, Daniele, Roberto, and Simone, and apply it to this case. This is the general infinitesimal generator, and this is the formula, the expression of the BRS group, BRS for Bondi Rond sphere.
Sorry, Antoine, I have a question. So this BRS group, it seems bigger than BMS group theoretically. But on the other hand, when I want to see BMS arising as a subgroup of BRS, I need to violate the condition.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the point, and I'm just talking about it right there.
Okay, sorry.
You're right. As we said, I have the supertranslation, the diffeomorphism of the sphere, and the constant rescalings. But, a point that appears even in the level of BMS is that if you have a boost, you don't have only the horizontal part, you also have the vertical part of the boost. And the vertical part of the boost is not a constant. So when and this is problematic because then it means that I'm not even able to recover the vertical part, not only of the super boost, but also of the boost. However, when you compute the charge, it seems that you recover actually the charges found by Compère, Adrien, and Romain, because you have in the computation of the charge terms of linkage that compensates actually what you don't see in this vertical part by the variation of the determinant of the metric. Because in generalized BMS, you fix the determinant of the metric, while here you don't. Instead, you fix the scalar curvature in some sense. And it turns out that when you compute the charges and the flux, you find that you have the same charges. But it's still true that the algebra is different because at the level of supertranslations, and because you don't have this vertical part. However, you have all the diffeomorphisms of the sphere, like that. Yeah, like you can see that really the reparametrizations of the sphere, but you don't. You are kept in the Rontian. You cannot go out from the Rontian sphere.
I lost. What is the motivation to look at BRS?
It's just to have covariance. Because if you look at the symplectic potential of Einstein-Hilbert and you pull back it at scry,
you have delta r. That's why you want to fix your HA, right? That's what you're saying.
Yeah, I want this, but I want that because really, if I look at even at the level of GBMS without talking about BMSW, what happens? It's a bit technical, but not very so hard to understand. It's actually if you have the Einstein-Hilbert symplectic potentials and take the pullback at scry. Mm-hmm. And then take the lead derivative. This does not commute because psi is because there diverges as chi and there are a lot of divergence. It's not commute with the fact that first just computing this and then taking the pullback. So what you should expect is that theta r is given by theta Einstein-Hilbert plus a corner term. So theta Einstein-Hilbert is just covariant. So if I just compute this from scratch, you can say, okay, but why this is not just a boundary term? Because I just added a boundary term, so something which was covariant. And it's really because here we're interested in the pullback of the symplectic potential at scry. And this does not commute with the lead derivative. So what we have to do, so we will recover this species if we take instead total symplectic potential and pullback after, but here because we take the pullback first, we have these additional pieces. And
maybe I can add. Okay, so here when you write the vector field, it's not the full vector field. There's an extra term which is minus r d omega.
Exactly.
R, exactly. So it's because now you have this r derivative.
Yeah.
Okay. So your vector field is not completely a vector. I think.
Yes.
That's what you want to say, right?
Yes. Sorry.
But so
you have r. You have r omega
r
double.
R d r.
Yeah.
Okay, so okay.
Maybe you cannot see it here. Yes. And this is divergent. And so we should be careful when we are taking the lead derivative because you have such vector fields which are not. Which are not tangent to scry, and so this commutation, you cannot commute the pullback and the fact of taking the lead derivative, so you have not covariant terms in the bulk that you can suppress only if you say that this W is angle independent.
Oh, okay, so you restrict the symmetry.
Yes, exactly.
Simple.
Yes, it's a bit like BMSW, you have any variations delta QAB allowed, but here you only take the variation of the sphere, of the Ricci curvature, to be fixed, and you allow the determinant to be whatever you want, while in GBMS, you fix the determinant, but you can go out of the Rontian sphere, right? You have this super boost that in general go out of the Rontian sphere. So if you, okay, so I was there, and so this is just a picture to remind you where we are. So we are from BMSW, then you can fix the determinant of the metric and be in GBMS. This does not preserve the Rontian sphere, but if you go from BMSW by fixing this W, you still preserve the Rontian sphere, and if you go from BMS to GBMSW, you also preserve the Rontian sphere. So there are two groups, this BRS and this BMS, which preserve the unit Rontian sphere. But as Lucas said, you cannot go from one group to the other because in BRS, you only have the horizontal component of the boots and not the vertical one. And when you do this, so this is something that you can do very generally. You have this renormalized symplectic potential that depends of the news and the external derivative of the shear. And in general, because here we are not in BMS, delta QAB can vary. And you have this additional term, XAB delta QAB. You can make an integration by part in some sense using the fact that at null infinity, the surface is expansion free. And so you have a first term that will become a corner term, and you will add to the symplectic potential. And you will have the remaining term, which will be proportional to U, so the coordinate on scry, and will involve derivative of this tensor that can be very general, XAB. This tensor XAB is proportional to the shear and to the metric. So it means that when you will take the time derivative of it, you will recover the news. And so it tells you that by making this integration by party, by shifting the symplectic potential, the bare symplectic potential by corner terms, you can have a symplectic potential that is stationary in the sense that everything will depend on the news, time, the variation of the metric. So you can do this even for GBMS, and you can still add the NVAC or the Gerock tensor in order to make it.
Sorry, tell me if I'm interrupting too much, Luca. But it seems that you add so a corner term to recover like stationarity or even covariance. But is it the sum? Is it a term that is similar in the paper of Compare, Fiorucci, and Rizziconi, where they add also this like shear times delta QAB in order then to fix the divergences? It looks like.
Yeah. I mean, here it's always this theta r is already renormalized. So the CAB delta QAB, the term that you're talking about, I already renormalized.
What is the X? Maybe that's my
question. Okay. So the X is what you get if you compute the finite part of the Einstein-Hilbert symplectic potential. So its general form will be. So you have this term. If I remember well. Okay? Yes. So this is all the, I didn't want to.
Okay.
And so, but you know that this is proportional to the shear, not to the news. So by integrating by part, actually, you can have something stationary here at the level of symplectic potential. You just modify the charge by a corner term.
Okay.
This is very general, but, and this is really for the stationarity. It has nothing to do with covariance, but you see that now for covariance, we'll need the supertranslation field that we introduced before. And this supertranslation field, actually, I just gave you the expression of the covariance symplectic potential that we get. It's very ugly, but remember that all these quantities U, CAB, D, etc., that I just that were just some components of the metric. Actually, they are not covariant at all. This is why the covariance symplectic potential is so ugly. But you can obtain it by adding corner terms. And the nice point also is that it seems to be unique except to a term that is of this form, beta NAB C hat AB delta epsilon IJ. And I call it beta because it's similar to the ambiguity in the generalized angular momentum that had Eli Shash and Nichols in their paper. They had these two family of parameter alpha and beta. This alpha was the one in front of alpha was an R term of the form CIB, DC, CB, CBC. And this is also an R term. But this is the one that seems ambiguous. However, if we want to recover the charges by compare of Fiorucci and Rizziconi, we have had to fix this beta. But then this is covariant. And so if you want to add other corner terms, they have to be covariant. And this is from what follows the uniqueness. Not only of that, because you also require that the charges are to be proportional to the first derivative of the metric across the corner. So this eliminates a lot of possible terms. But if you have these requirements, covariance, stationarity, and charges, which do not depend on the news, basically, but only at most on the shear, it seems to be that the symplectic potential is unique, except for this term. And now you can compute the charge. So here I just computed the charge for U0 equals to zero because it's just easier. And you see that you get this generalized angular momentum here. That is exactly the one that you get in the paper of Compère, Adrien, and Romain for generalized super rotations and super boosts. But you get if you choose beta equals 1 over 16. So in order for the stem to vanish. And in particular, you have this soft term that they had that you can find by hand, but here it really comes from the symplectic potential. You can see that this is the term that actually comes from comes from this term in the symplectic potential. It's really this soft term that appears when you integrate by part and consider other terms in the charges. And also, you have this modified mass, which is not, so this is the mass that you have, indeed. So this is not the bonding mass, but the mass minus the two derivative of the shear. And indeed, then, this is not the bonding mass, and it's because of this covariance requirement that you need to modify the shear in the symplectic potential. As I showed you in the BMS case, this is almost the same story here. You had to modify the shear to get this covariant shear and to get a covariant symplectic potential and then charges that can be covariant. So, yes, this is what I wrote here. And again, if you are not interested by covariance, because you can say but this the fact you know that you don't have the real boost, but only their horizontal part is a bit weird. You can still obtain the charges that they got in their paper again by doing this method by integration by part, adding terms in the symplectic potential, and so adding new terms in the charges. And you can even do it in non-round spheres, but. It bothers me a bit personally because I think really covariance is a strong requirement because we want our charges and flux to be invariant, to be independent of the choice of conformal factor and the choice of foliation. So and also the covariance of the symplectic potentials give you a nice algebra, as I explained before, and this is. This is what I wanted to emphasize again. So because now we have a symplectic potential that is covariant, we have charges, we have the Banach-Strausser bracket. We can define the bracket by the Banach-Strausser bracket and show that then there is no, there may be a central extension, but it's cross-section independent. It does not depend on the cross-section on which you evaluate it. However, this is a bit a subtlety here because you can say, okay, it does not depend on the cross section. So what about just the brackets without at one cross section? The point here is that you can always add term which are U independent in the charge. They can be arbitrary. If you have this x epsilon s, such as this x zero derivative vanishes, then you can always add these terms in the chart that you won't see in the flux. And the question that if you can find then a good charge that vanishes in, for instance, in Minkowski spacetime for any cross sections or give you just a bracket without any central extension at all, not only a U independent one, but any central extension at all, maybe you can do it by adding terms that will depend on U0, or maybe you cannot. I don't have a definite answer for it. But it seems to be less clear than in BMS, where we had the charge. So with the charge of Laura and Romain, who, for instance, where was it? For instance, you know that this is the C hat that you must add in the Varsita because, and not the C or something else, because this is the difference between the two is just a U independent quantity. So this is exactly the same of ambiguity that we talked before, but this is with the C hat that you have no central extension. So this is exactly the kind of term that you must add. Okay. So I think this is all that I'm going to say, and I'm just on time, I think. So thank you very much for your attention. If you have questions or...
Why yes. Do you like horizontal extensions?
It's more that I like covariance, and covariance doesn't have any central. If you want to promote at the end the charges to operators and find a faithful representation of the, yeah, I would expect to have. It's better to have no central extension at all, right?
I think here one of the problems is like they are field dependent.
Yeah, they are not central, so they are most likely central extensions. Central extensions are fine. But
yeah.
You should not call them central extensions.
Yeah. Okay.
Big difference. Okay.
Yeah.
Creates algebraic.
Yes.
Nonsense.
Yes. That's true.
But central extension is fine.
Yeah. And here, in this sense, you know that because it should not depend on the cross section. You know that if you have a central extension with the Barnich-Trossard bracket,
it's not a central extension.
It's
a cocycle.
If you have a cocycle,
very, very different.
Yeah, if you have a field independent, if you have this field cocycle, it will only depend on the field U0 or QAB, but it cannot depend on the chi or on the mass or all these other quantities because these quantities depend on the cross section war, while the supertranslation field U0, for instance, does not. Just fixed once and for all as an initial condition.
I guess I would ask the same question, but what physical insight do you expect to gain from all this analysis? What do you have in mind with this new machinery, new charges?
I think, this is the introduction of this. This is why I wanted to discuss BMS first, because here, as in your paper, I suppose you have something that is nice, which gives you that you have an outer charge defined from a symplectic potential that allows you to measure the energy of the gravitational haze at which angle. And so it's something that you, in some sense, if you want to generalize to general diffeomorphisms of the sphere, you really, in order to have covariance, you really need to work with charges which look like this. So this is the first point. And this is something that is, for instance, measurable, because if you have a container, a field of water, and you want to know locally what is the energy that we will lose in the water, what the temperature of the water that will, how the temperature of the water will increase, this is the charges that you have to look for. And also, it's still interesting to know, because there are a lot of trials to find the charges for generalized super rotations or super boosts. But if we can find, a way of deriving them by a symplectic potential that is covariant and stationary, I think it will help us to remove the ambiguities that are under debate, and also try to give a physical meaning of it, because again, if you don't have covariance, maybe I'm wrong and maybe you can still get a physical meaning, but still it means that your charges actually measure foliations or conformal factors or things that are not very physical. So I think that this study is important in the sense that if it works, it can help to say that, okay, these charges are really physical, and this is in principle the things that we could observe maybe one day.
Can I just ask the last question? I missed maybe at the end. Your title is Generalized Angular Momentum.
Yeah.
So can you just show me, and because you say it's Yeah, yeah, no, but like, do you have, what is the generalized angular momentum?
Yeah, so generalized angular momentum was the charge here, the yeah. one that...
Like you, the B, so there is still an ambiguity in there.
There's still an ambiguity, but you want to recover it maybe for, to recover the dry strobel charges for a BMS, so this fixes the ambiguity. By saying my beta should be, I forgot to talk about this, but you also have another charge associated to this constant with scaling it. But
why? Okay, sorry. So the your well, the generalized wild pass procedure give you this Q bar, I understood.
Yes.
But you still have an ambiguity in that.
I have an ambiguity in one term in the flux, yes.
There's still a family of...
Yes, there is still a family of parameters. Yeah.
Then you need another criteria, whatever it is, to...
Yes, exactly. The criteria is I want to recover the usual angular momentum for the dry strobel angular momentum.
Is there another like value of beta where the angular momentum would be interesting?
Yeah, but for instance, the paper that I mentioned... the one of Eli Shash and Nichols, they have these two family of parameters, alpha and beta.
Yeah.
Here you have an ambiguity, so we will cover the ambiguity in beta, but not in alpha.
Okay.
Alpha is the ambiguity is this one, CAB, DC, CB, C.
Yeah.
Okay, you remember? But this seems very hard. If, maybe it's possible, but I it's very hard to get this from a symplectic potential.
Okay.
Okay? But this one is very easy because it's just C hat squared times epsilon s. This is a corner term that you can have.
Okay, so let's thank Antoine again.